Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us in this Thursday afternoon. Our guest today is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we'd love to have your questions for him during the next half hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. You can send emails to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey Stan, great to be on the show. I like the new theme music.
Thank you.
It's very calming, less presidential than the previous theme music, but I like it. It's got a nice ring to it.
Well, good. I'm glad. We had a number of people who talked to us about the theme music. It had been a couple of years since we'd swapped out the Ask the Mayor theme and the theme music for our monthly conversation with Mitch Daniels, so we thought beginning of 2017 would be a good time to do that. So thanks for saying something.
I like it. It's noticeable.
Good. Well, let's start out with something that you've been working on. You have pushed your city council this week to change the way that your city's Economic Development Commission works. What was it not doing that you now would like to see it do going forward?
Well, it just wasn't active. One of the big pushes I've made over the past 5 years is at least bring Frankfort into the 21st century in terms of the tools that we offer to incentivize private investment to happen in our community. We talk all the time about how we want an IHOP, how we want a Starbucks, how we want more private investment to come to our industrial park. It's important to know that those things, they just don't happen. You have to strategize. You have to plan. So obviously one thing we put in the works in the past 5 years, we now have an active and engaged Frankfort Redevelopment Commission. We have an active and engaged finance committee on our city council who really is great at getting involved with site selectors, working with our Chamber of Commerce, and doing what's best for not only the taxpayer, but what's fair for businesses that are willing to take a risk and a chance on Clinton County and Frankfort. And then this most recent piece from Monday evening is we really rehabilitated and re-energized our Economic Development Commission. An Economic Development Commission under state statute has specific powers that are different than any other board. And one of the main powers that it has is it gives us the ability to promote the use of conduit financing to enable companies to borrow funds using our name as municipality or to generate and utilize economic development bonds through our TIF district. And we've had an EDC in our city for a number of years, but it's been incredibly inactive. The records are old. So what we did on Monday night, we restructured the terms. We set new terms. The city council made a new appointment. Councilwoman Wanda Mitchell will be that representative for the council. And it will just give us that extra tool so that we can make sure Frankfort is on the cutting edge of having the necessary ability to grow our city the way we want it to.
Let me ask a little bit about that conduit financing you were just talking about. You say you want private companies to borrow using the city's name. Are you thinking more about small businesses there, kind of mom-and-pop operations, or would something like a Wabash National or a Frito-Lay, one of the bigger employers in your community, be able to embark on that as well?
Either or. I think we'd be open to anything that would come across our desk and that a private investor would like to present to the council or myself as mayor or even a future mayor. I can tell you what I see directly on the horizon as Stan is this tool being utilized for downtown redevelopment. Initially, our downtown revitalization plan is calling for more downtown housing opportunities. I think we'll have some opportunities on the horizon to engage the EDC to make our downtown more attractive. And it's important for all investors out there to know that Frankfort's not stuck in the past anymore, that if you have a plan, if you want to run it by us, we're going to have the modern tools to incentivize you properly. One thing that our EDC has done in the past as well that I see them continuing to do, they can designate revitalization target areas throughout our city. So before an abatement goes to the council, if an investor is wanting to go in a certain area of the city, the EDC can actually designate that as a revitalization target area, which would then move on to the city council and actually make that abatement possible for that private investor.
If these loans are partially in the city's name, do you worry at all that if a small company to whom you give a loan fails, or if there is some reason for a company to default on that loan, is there any way that the city is on the hook financially there?
that's where, and you bring up a great point, and that's something we do with tax abatements, that's where clawback provisions are very important. If someone's going to come to our city and we're going to incentivize them through a tax abatement or an economic development bond through our TIF district, we have to make sure that the mutual expectations are up front that if we grant this request, we will support you and we will hold to our word, but if the investment doesn't end up coming to fruition like you stated it would, if the employment numbers don't come to the point that you said they were going to. We've also been talking about threading in with our abatements to require a certain percentage of that workforce to reside in Frankfort and Clinton County. So we make sure that our plant managers and our presidents of our corporations are encouraging our people that work here to live here. If those things don't happen, we need to have the ability to have legal recourse to go back against them and say, okay, it's time to pony up some money. It's time to make us whole because the deal wasn't carried out like you said it was going to. And that's something we just have to be very careful with and very transparent with.
Is this the kind of thing where if a company goes into bankruptcy and tries to discharge debt that way, as often happens with big companies when they restructure, is that the kind of thing that could hang you out to dry if it happens?
It could. And, you know, the important thing to look at with tax abatement is at times, you know, in essence, you're not out anything that you didn't have to begin with. So if I have an investment happen out in the industrial park and we do a strategic tax abatement and there's currently that ground is assessed at a current value, we're recouping taxes through that investment, even with the abatement that weren't there to begin with. So it can be a net positive, even say if heaven forbid that company were to go out, you know, maybe we're left with a shell building that we can still market. Maybe we've gained some tax revenue that we can turn around and still look at that situation as a net positive. I think the important thing to keep in mind is every situation is very unique, and that's why the democratic process on the local level, it has to be transparent. It has to be very thorough. Our finance committee with our council, they take that subcommittee appointment very seriously. They vet these companies well before any announcement or any recommendation is made to the council, a proposal is made, and we have that mutual expectation up front so that we have those clawbacks in writing that if something goes south, we have a legal recourse against that corporation or that private investor.
Why was it necessary to kind of rush this through the council and do all the readings at once rather than the normal, slower, more deliberative process?
Sure. Well, at times for me, you know, I think government has to react at a certain speed, and I think that's the speed of business. I think at times in government, things can move so slow that you can miss out on good opportunities that you would have had for your community. And it's important to keep in mind with this specific vote that went through the council, this isn't anything new. We're not creating a new law. We're not creating a new commission. We're reestablishing something that already exists. So that's number one, I think, why the council felt comfortable in suspending rules and passing on all three readings. Number two is, you know, I feel as though as an executive and members on the council feel as though that we have to be very prepared, that I think we could even have some opportunities come forward this year, and I would hate to miss out on those opportunities and allowing those investments to at least go through the public process. It doesn't say that lock, stock, and barrel they're going to go through, but it will allow them to go through the public process of going through the EDC, the RDC, and the council so that our citizens have those opportunities to have a better community. We want to be ready. We want to play the game on the balls of our feet and not on our heels, and I think that's why you saw that vote on Monday evening.
Are there specific projects or specific investments that you think that you have before you right now that you will miss out, you would have missed out on by not going through the normal procedure of making this take several council meetings to actually pass?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Can you
I think
give
those
examples?
Things will come to light here over the next quarter. I really do. I think, you know, I'm hearing murmurings. I'm hearing conversations. Council members are being approached, especially about our downtown, Stan. You know, our downtown for decades, it's been a bit sleepy There's been people that have been working very hard, and for a while the downtown really boomed. Well, we've got some vacant storefronts. We understand that. We understand we've got some challenges before us. But you know what? We've also got some great wins. We've got Ivy Tech. We have several local restaurants and downtown businesses that are doing great. Main Street's been really involved, and we've had some great festivals. And that, you know, and with this DRP now in place, you know, we're making a statement to the region that if you want to root some private investment in an up and coming community, look at Frankfort. And I think we're going to have some opportunities here over the next couple months that obviously will fully go through the public process, that if we didn't have that EDC in place and ready to act, we could miss out on opportunities. And, you know, it's our duty to at least give our city those opportunities to grow, and that's why we need the EDC.
This is similar to a move that we talked with Todd Barton about when he was on our show last. What he has done in Crawfordsville is sever some ties with a group that had been tasked with marketing Crawfordsville to outside investors, but the mayor did not think the city was getting a very good return on its investment. Is that something you want from this reconstituted board, more kind of bang for your buck?
Sure, and it's getting more people involved. These will be additional volunteer members that will have the opportunity to serve on a board. Wanda Mitchell is obviously a current city councilman. She's well in tune with the downtown. Her district she represents directly abuts the downtown, so I know she'll do a great job. But this also gives some other people the opportunity to serve that may want to be a part of the revitalization of Frankfort. And so I'm going to encourage people today. You know, I'm keeping my ear to the ground. There's five total people that serve on that board. The mayor makes three of those appointments. The county council actually makes one of those appointments, and the city council makes one of those appointments. So I'll encourage anyone that's listening that's interested, give me a call. We can talk about it. And the way I view these boards is, Stan, is, you know, when you're appointed to these boards, you have a certain responsibility, and you need to study, you need to do your homework, and then when we have an opportunity, you're representing all of Frankfort, just like I am, so we have to uphold ourselves in a professional manner, work with our fellow board members, and do what's best for the city. So it's a way to get more people involved, give us a modern tool, and give our downtown and our city a chance to grow in a way that it simply has never had the chance of doing before.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we'd love to have your questions for him on the show today. 765-496-1999 is our telephone number. Our email address is ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, this talk about trying to get this Economic Development Commission done quickly gets me to something that I've actually wanted to ask you for a while, and now seems like a decent time. And you've been in office for 5 years now, as you've mentioned, and you've talked repeatedly about being proud to be the mayor of the town where you grew up. And I want to know from you, as you have learned more about the inner workings of the city, the personalities who inhabit it, some of them for a very, very long time, are you noticing that there are some systemic problems in your hometown that may have led to this kind of stagnation, especially in the downtown area that you're talking about, and that you feel like you need to make quick moves to try to stem some of that tide?
Well, one thing as a young person, when I came in, I wanted to move very fast. And that's got its upsides and that's got its downsides. That's why I have a lot of elders around me that, you know, when I get going a little bit too fast, they say, hey, Chris, let's pull back a little bit. And that's okay. That's what I expect them to do. This job has really taught me prudence. Local government, it has to be fast. It has to be efficient when needed, but it also has to be very thorough, because these decisions that we're making are not only going to impact our city while I'm mayor, but, you know, my kids as they grow up here. So I've learned to be very prudent. But one thing that I've really witnessed, Stan, and this is something that when I ran, people were interested in my age, and I think it benefited me. And, you know, I'll say it. I do think that there's an issue with nepotism across communities in Indiana, probably across the nation. It's probably just a small-town thing. Certain people get in positions, and then they get family members hired, and then family members are appointed to boards, and then over time there's conflicts of interest, and that continues to snowball more and more and more. And then we get this attitude that when we create employee policies or retirement policies, that, you know, we're going to take care of those people. And it would be hard not to. You know, I'd want to take care of my family if they were around me, but it doesn't make it right. And I think that's one thing that I've seen, and I'm just guessing that Frankfort's probably not the only smaller community that has this. And that's why I'm speaking with my boards that we have to think like a business. Now, I know government can't act exactly like a business. There are some main core differences there. And yes, we want to take care of our employees. We want to do right by them. The greatest asset that our city has is our employees. They're absolutely fantastic. But things can't be done at the expense of the taxpayer. Things can't be done at the expense of a ratepayer. Moral, correct decisions have to be right. And more than anything, over these next 3 years, I hope to get the right people in the right positions. I want to set accountability. I want people to know that it's not about who you know or what your last name is or how much money you have in the bank. You have an opportunity to make a difference here, and everybody has that opportunity to join in and make our city a better place. And that's perhaps one of the biggest things that I've seen that I don't agree with, and just this mantra of, well, we've always done it this way, so we've got to keep doing it that way. No, that's not true. We need new ideas. We need fresh ideas. That's why every week I meet with a group of high school students from the Frankfort Senior High School every Friday at 2:20 p.m. And I really value my time with those young people because they give me a different way to look at this city that I don't hear about every day. So just getting different voices involved is also very important.
You mentioned the possibility of nepotism holding small towns back. You've talked about people kind of being stuck in the ways of always running the city the same way. Let me ask you another piece of that, an age-related piece. Do you think, even after 5 years in office, people still see you as the boy mayor, and they don't treat you the way you would be treated if you were 10 to 15 years older? Because I have to say, from talking with you on this program and talking with city council members and county council members for other stories, I get the sense that every now and again, the other people who are in elected office from time to time have been perhaps a little condescending to you, perhaps ready to kind of pat you on the head like you're a small child and say, well, go on your way now, young Mr. McBarnes, and do your thing. Do you get that feeling still?
Yeah. And you know, that's okay. That's what they did to my Butler Bulldogs in the basketball tournament a couple years ago. But we kept fighting back. And I think, you know, we proved in the Butler way is you get up every day and you respect people and you do what's right and you treat people the way they want to be treated. And you try to do the small things right in your life and things will work out and you'll end up being a champion. And, you know, that's okay to me. I don't want people to bow down to me. I think that's one thing that my youth actually added to this position is I think a lot of mayors, you know, they get that title and then all of a sudden they get this sense of entitlement that I'm the mayor and, you know, everyone has to bow down and everything that I say it gets done dramatically. Well, that's not what a public servant should be. A public servant should be constantly filled with humility. A public servant should be on the absolute same level as their citizens. And I think me having my age, I know I have a lot to prove. You know, I have a title, but that's all I have. It's what I do with that title that matters. So when I get that, to answer your question, it pushes me that much harder. It pushes me to work harder, do the small things right, connect with the right people, surround myself with the right people to prove those individuals wrong and to move my hometown forward. That's what this was about for me. It wasn't a stepping stone. It wasn't a salary. It was simply I wanted to come back. I wanted to utilize my time on this earth, no matter how long it may be, and I wanted to make a difference for Frankfort. And I feel like we've done that.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Get your questions into him by calling 765-496-1999, sending emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweeting questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Let me ask you about a story of the day today. There have been stories about this Day Without Immigrants that's going on nationwide. Yours is a city that has a large immigrant and Latino population, a much higher per capita population than a lot of cities in Indiana. Is this something that you find is resonating in Frankfort today?
I know there's a sense of fear out there in regards to the executive orders that have been made. I will say that I've talked to my chief of police about this. I did this roughly a month ago. Nothing that's been said on the national level changes the way we do business in Frankfort. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. If they're a citizen of Frankfort, that's how we've done things. That's how we'll continue to do things. I've even sat down with a couple different Latino pastors who said, "Mayor, we're worried." And I've told them if it would help, I will come to their congregation and speak to them. And I think Chief Bacon and I are going to do that. I am a believer in the law. If you're wondering, Mayor, do you want to declare Frankfort a sanctuary city? No, I do not. I'm not going to go down that road. I feel like that we can be a city that follows the law and respects the law while at the same time being a welcoming city to our immigrants, because I think diversity, not only skin color, but diversity amongst family cultures and work ethics and the way we view the world, that's what has made our nation so strong. Now, in terms of this strike day nationally, in terms of immigrants, here's what I've learned about the Hispanic people of Frankfort is they're incredibly hardworking people. They take their jobs really seriously, and they work really, really, really hard. So it would surprise me if our local population would choose to stay home for a day, because in all honesty, the people I've gotten to know here in Frankfort, they have a respect for authority. They have respect for their bosses. And I don't know if they'd be willing to stay home, because they know that would just end up hurting their coworker. That would end up hurting production and numbers that their organization counts on to survive, to be able to pay their salary and their benefits for their family. I will tell you, my wife works in human resources in our industrial park at one of the largest industries there. I have gotten no calls today regarding employees not showing up. I've seen nothing online, social media wise. So I would have to say at this point in time, Stan, that I don't think that's impacting Frankfort, perhaps like it's impacting other larger cities across our country.
Let me ask one more question regarding the president's executive orders. There have been stories about immigration raids in Indiana and other neighboring states. And as we've noted, there's a sizable Latino and immigrant population in your city. What would be your stance if a federal agency came to you and said, would you help us take part in some of these activities?
Well, I guess a lot of it would be depend on who they'd be looking for. You know, I talked to my chief of police about this, and, you know, he said, Mayor, he goes, keep in mind, as a local city, really the only immigration authority we have is if the Department of Homeland Security or ICE, like you're alluding to, would come to us and say, you know, we have a search warrant that we would like you to help us issue to someone. Now, I asked my chief of police, I said, Troy, how many times has this happened over your career? Because Troy's been, you know, there since the beginning of his career, so a great amount of time. He said it's only happened one or two times in his career, and in those instances, these were individuals that were involved with assault, with substances or drugs or violence, very, very bad situations. Would I support someone coming in and ripping a mother away from her child that works 40 hours a week at Schultz IGA or Frito-Lay? No, I absolutely would not. And I think our values as a nation, we shouldn't be going that direction. If anything, we should be asking ourselves, how can we make the immigration process more fluid and easily acceptable for people that don't have the money to hire a big-time attorney to go through these big processes? How can we make it more accessible to them? Those are the questions we should be asking. Now, if ICE or DHS came here and said, listen, we need to go after a big-time drug felon, he's manufactured meth, he's been involved in assaults, much like the individual that murdered Kate Steinle on the West Coast. Would I support that? Absolutely. And I think there's a fine line there, and some common sense has to be applied to this.
On to another thing, in just our last few minutes, the city has embarked upon a grant program to help people fix up unsafe houses. There, you and I were talking on one of our previous programs about how you've got pockets in your city of really, really nice houses, and then some pockets not too far from those of houses that could use some TLC. In many cases, these grants are kind of small, just a few thousand dollars a piece, and home improvements can run very, very quickly into thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, especially if you're paying for someone else to do the labor on those. I'm wondering if you're going to need to find, as a city, additional grant funding apart from the organization you've partnered with to try to augment this and improve the amount of money that people are able to get in case there is something really wrong with a house that they want to save.
Sure. Great question, Stan. You know, this isn't the total answer. It's a small step. Will there need to be additional resources for people? Absolutely. And I have to really thank the center at Jinx Rest for their help. This is a program, the SHARP program, that's been going on in your town of Lafayette and Tippecanoe County. And this is just another area that we've set down from the fine folks of Tippecanoe County. And we're really learning from them. That's how and why we're implementing this. Our partner bank will be the Farmers Bank. So I really want to thank our president and CEO there, Karen Gregerson. This is a partnership through the Federal Home Loan Bank. We'll be tapping into the NIP program and the AMP program. The AMP program gives us up to $15,000 per project. The NIP program gives us up to $10,000. And, you know, we've got to be careful with these investments. So if someone comes to us and they need a new roof, there's no reason in investing in that roof if that whole entire home is deteriorating and the plumbing's bad and the electric's bad. But if someone comes to us and they just need a little bit more energy efficiency, they need a new furnace, they need new siding, they need a new roof, and the rest of the house is particularly stable, that's going to be a good investment. If someone needs an ADA accessible restroom or an ADA accessible ramp, we've had really nothing to turn to other than our Neighbors Helping Neighbors program. These are totally forgivable grants as long as the individual resides in their home for 5 years after the project is completed. You have to be a homeowner to qualify for these programs. So it's just going to be another arrow in our quiver, and what I hope to see it do is this: to help our homes right now that are kind of teetering. They're not too bad. They're not great. These people need some help to stabilize our existing housing stock that's just kind of right in the middle of the road, so it doesn't continue to deteriorate down the road. That's the point of this program. The city's going to be looking for a director of this program that will help homeowners walk through the documentation process and work with the Farmers Bank to reimburse the city. And the other great thing about this program is we'll be able to hire local contractors to do this work. So it's also going to help local business owners with some additional projects throughout construction season, and hopefully will help their bottom line a little bit.
In just our last minute or so, let me ask you real quick about those houses that are teetering, because only homeowners who make below a certain amount per year, I think it's $38,000 a year, are eligible for these grants. And that likely means they do not have a lot of other financial wherewithal to keep making improvements if, for instance, something else on that house fails. Are you worried that you'll just patch holes with these grants and then other holes will pop up and then those homeowners will just be back to square one with a different problem they need to fix?
That's why the director of this program is going to be very important. They almost need to be a house whisperer, in essence. They need to look at these investments and make sure that this one investment will really stabilize this home. A great thing about this program is people can make up to 80% of the area median income, which you alluded to, is about $38,000. So a senior citizen on a fixed income, a couple, you know, they're not in that poverty level, but they're right above it, that lower to middle class. This program helps them. There's not a lot of programs out there that help these people. They slip through the cracks. Hopefully, this program will shore that up a bit.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. Thanks, as always, for your time, and we look forward to chatting with you again in March.
Stan, thanks so much. It's a pleasure. Hope you have a great week.
Same to you, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next month. And don't forget that we've got our program next week with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. If you've got questions for him, you can send those via email in advance of the show. ask@wbaa.org is our email address. You can also tweet questions anytime you like at WBAA News on Twitter, and you can call those questions in for Mayor Barton live during our show next week, starting at 1 next Thursday. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. This has been Ask the Mayor. Have a good rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.